listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Art of Love with your host, Lucia, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to The Art of Love. My name is Lucia. I'm your host and a dating and relationship expert, and I'm here to entertain, educate, and enlighten you about love, dating, and relationships, take your live calls, solve your dating dilemmas, answer your emails, and speak to authors of books, which I find interesting. And today we're going to be talking about The Seven Natural Laws of Love, which is the title of the book that we'll be discussing. Of course, we've all heard about the law of attraction, you know, with The Secret. We all know about that. But, you know, there are actually six other laws. So I am going to bring on my guest who is in Hawaii. And I'm so jealous. She's in Maui. And I intend to be in Maui sometime
Hello.
Soon. So welcome to the show, Deborah.
Yes, I'm here.
There you are. It's Deborah Taj Annapol. And, of course, the book is The Seven Natural Laws of Love. Deborah Annapol, Ph.D., is a leading-edge healer, writer, yogini, and seminar leader. She has a doctorate in psychology and is the author of several books and videos. Dr. Annapol has worked with people exploring conscious relationships and sexual healing for over two decades. So how did you discover the seven natural laws?
I have been studying spiritual traditions around the world for a long time, and I was noticing that they're pretty much in agreement about what they teach us about love. And what these traditions teach us about love is very different from what I learned in my family and my friends and in the everyday school of life. And so I wanted to create a systematic way of describing these laws, and that's where it came from.
Okay, and it's interesting that there's seven, because seven is a very, very spiritual number.
Yeah, well, I did have in mind the seven chakras, the seven energy centers in the body, each of which governs a particular, we could call it, experience in life. For example, the fourth chakra is associated with the heart, with unconditional love. The third chakra is associated with personal power. The fifth chakra is associated with communication and freedom. So I did have them linked up to those energy centers in the body. They seem to just fall right into place that way.
Of course. So now you mentioned the Disneyland version of love. So what is that?
Yeah, the Disneyland version is the stories that we all grew up with, Sleeping Beauty. Mm. You know, the beautiful maiden is asleep, and Prince Charming comes and kisses her and awakens her, and they live happily ever after. The Disneyland version is characterized by leaving out all of the real life tricky places that we encounter on this journey into love, such as dealing with conflict or having to give up the idea that your beloved is always going to want exactly what you want, and if they don't, then you have the right to control them or make them do it your way.
Right, yeah. So with the Disneyland version, you know, all women are looking around for Prince Charming, and all the men are looking around for Sleeping Beauty or Cinderella.
Yes, yes.
And that's probably where you get in trouble.
You know, there's nothing wrong with these stories. It's just that it's not how it works. And so when people go into a relationship with the expectation that it's going to be eternal romance, they're very disappointed when they find out that's not how it is.
So then what is genuine love?
Well, I believe that the idea that we have of altruism, where most people are familiar with this idea, although they often think it does not apply in their love relationships, their romantic relationships, but where we actually place another person's happiness ahead of our own. And many people do this with their children without question, but very rarely do we think this applies to a husband or a wife. And this is not to say that you become a doormat and have no needs and wants of your own, but just that the idea that love is essentially unselfish. It's not about getting your way. It's not about getting someone else to meet your needs. It's about what you can give. And there needs to be reciprocity. If you're just giving and getting nothing back, that's not sustainable either. But I think many of us are looking at love as having something to do with filling in the gaps, filling in the empty places inside, making up for the disappointments that we may have had as a child. And there's nothing wrong with doing those things, but that's not what love is about. Love is really about acceptance, surrender, forgiveness, giving up judging and blaming and making wrong. And these things are, unlike the Disneyland version, this is actually what sustains love over a long period of time.
Yeah, they sound so difficult to do. You know, it's earlier you mentioned wanting the other person's happiness, which is the Buddhist definition of love, which is the definition I always give. And I remember I was actually on a radio show one time, and I gave that definition, and a woman that I was speaking to that called in said, "Oh, so if my husband is cheating, then I'm just supposed to be happy that he's cheating?" So what do you say to someone like that?
Well, first of all, someone who's cheating is actually, on some level, not happy. And I don't mean that they're cheating because they're unhappy. I mean that on some level, they're feeling either guilty or actually empathic about the pain that they're causing to the person that they're cheating on. So it's actually not supporting their happiness to allow them to do something that is harmful, because we're all connected. Mm-hmm. And so if you're hurting your spouse, you're not really deeply happy. At the same time, you can't control another person. Right. So if you have a spouse that's determined to cheat on you, you could certainly, you know, open up the conversation and ask to, perhaps with a therapist or some other a supportive third party, ask to have a conversation that allows you to find some better way to handle this situation. Yeah. So, you know, this idea that people are monogamous for an entire lifetime is another one of these myths about love. Mm-hmm. Very few people actually are willing or able to have only one partner for an entire lifetime.
Yeah.
Now, how we deal with this is another question. And I think being honest with a partner about having these desires and impulses, even if you don't act on them, is a good starting place. But again, it's not the Disneyland version. And, mm-hmm. and while many women might be horrified, or men for that matter, be horrified to hear their partner express an interest in someone else, they're not going to be anywhere near as horrified as they're going to be finding out that there's been an affair going on.
Right. It's better to talk about it first than find out after the fact.
Yes, exactly.
So what is the difference between man-made laws and the laws that come from love?
Well, the man-made laws are the ones that are established by church and state, whatever church you happen to live in or country you happen to live in. You know, we have laws. We have laws that say, this is the procedure that you have to follow to be married. And these are the tax benefits that you get, and this is the health insurance coverage that you get as a result. And so those are some of the man-made laws. And then there's also, they're not actually laws in the sense that they're not written in code, but they're norms. So, you know, it might be something as simple as, if you're married, you know, some people have the idea that means you're supposed to do everything together and go everywhere together. And not everyone accepts that one anymore, but for a while that was a very common man-made law. Mm-hmm. Or another one is if you love someone, then you express it by telling them that you love them or bringing them chocolates on Valentine's Day. Or getting them a diamond ring, right. Or, you know, these are the man-made yes. laws. And they're different in different periods of time and in different cultures. The natural laws are eternal, and it doesn't matter whether you believe in them or not. That's just the way those laws work. For example, the law of attraction, like attracts like. So someone who says that they are loving, but in reality, the predominant emotion is, say, anger, is going to attract a partner who has issues with anger, either who's also angry or who's very afraid of anger. It could be the same or the opposite. So this is a natural law. And this is just the way it works. And it doesn't change over time, and it doesn't change from culture to culture.
Okay, so let's talk about some of these laws. What is the law of source?
The law of source, I'm so glad you asked that,
okay.
Because this, in many ways, is the key to all of these natural laws, and also the key to the reality of happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
And the law of source simply means that the source of love is inside of you, not in your partner, not in any other person, not only is the source in you, but if we really look deeply into who we are, we discover that we are love. And once people begin to look inside for that source of love, then we're less dependent on making somebody else behave in a way that's going to make us feel loved. And that's where so many relationships break down.
That's where all relationships break down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know what you mean, because don't you find that it's easier to feel love, universal love for everyone in the early in the morning, just as you're waking up?
I do, yes. And, you know, people often wonder what is the function of sleep and dreaming. And it's been suggested that, you know, that may be to help us kind of digest all of our unprocessed emotions. And so when we wake up in the morning, we're fresh, we're more in our natural state, especially that time just really between sleeping and waking, we're more connected with source.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe we need to sleep so that we can get quote-unquote realigned and back to who we naturally are, and then we wake up renewed in the morning. And I have this experience often in the morning, and I get woken up with the radio. And just the other morning, I felt this. Some song came on, I can't remember. And I just felt this universal love for everyone. And it was not a romantic love, just a love for everyone to be happy and understanding everyone's innocence. I was like, oh, my God, if I could feel this way forever. But, of course, it's hard to do that.
Yes, yes. But, you know, some one of these man-made laws, I'll say, says that you should never go to sleep without resolving an argument. And I think this is another one of these errors in our thinking. Mind thinks that,
right.
But my experience is much more the way you describe, that, you know, sometimes the best thing you can do if you've got a conflict going is to get a good night's sleep and wake up fresh.
Yeah, I totally agree. So you also mentioned about the pitfalls of falling in love. What are some of the pitfalls?
The pitfalls of falling in love. Well, I think this falling word is a good clue.
Yes.
My teachers used to say what you want to do is rise in love rather than fall in love, because that falling is often an infatuation, is often a romantic illusion. And not only are we, you know, very prone to having poor judgment in this state, but we also, when we fall in love, usually what's happening is that we've projected out onto the other person some fantasy that we have about Prince Charming or Sleeping Beauty or whoever it is. And so inevitably we're disappointed when we find out that the real person out there is not our illusion. But this is the nature of falling. So this is one pitfall. Another one is that when you fall rather than rise, there's a sensation often of being out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And fear and excitement are very close biochemically in the body,
mm-hmm.
but this falling tends to have more of a fear flavor. And I think what I find much more empowering is the excitement of rising rather than the fear of falling.
Yeah, because we all have fear of falling. That's one of the fears we're born with.
Right. Right. So, you know, the language is a clue. Falling in love, although that's what everyone wants to do, is a mixed blessing at best.
Okay, so the next time someone mentions falling in love, I'm going to say, no, you want to rise in love.
That's right.
And you talked about control, and you said in the book that much of the conflict in love relationships arises from one person attempting to control the other.
Yes, exactly, because it comes back to the law of source. If we think the source of love is out there in that person, we're going to do everything we can to control our source of love. It's like an addict and their drug.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to control the other person or we're going to lose our source of love. There's a certain desperation that creeps in there. So, And control, the effort to control someone else, inevitably leads us into power struggle. And this is where so many relationships run aground. And I speak from both my own experience and that of people that I've coached, is that the effort to control another person is a invitation to a never-ending power struggle. And the power struggle is the opposite of the cooperation and co-creation and mutuality that most people are actually looking for.
Yeah. That's the great thing about the law of source, which I think might be maybe the most important law in the book, because once you realize that the love is within yourself, then you don't try to get it from anyone. It's not about trying to get anything. Now it's about giving it, because you feel it when you give it, not when you're trying to get it.
Right. Right.
So if people can just understand that, then there'll be less control. And then by not trying to control your relationship, it actually will work out better, because you won't be controlling, and whereas other people will try to be controlling, and they'll be like, wow, this person isn't trying to control me. I think I'll stick around.
That's right. And the other thing is that the effort to control is usually counterproductive. Either it creates resistance in the other person, and something that they might have been willing to do if it was not demanded, mm-hmm. they get into resistance about. A friend of mine recently wrote a book called How to Worship the Goddess and Keep Your Balls.
That's funny.
Yeah, this is kind of what it's about. How do you really nurture and support a woman without having her control you?
Yes.
How do you stand up to these efforts to control? Because, you know, we're human, we're not perfect, and until we're enlightened, we often are operating from this illusion that out there is the source of love and we have to control it. So the resistance to that is one problem. And then the other problem is, if the resistance is not there in the beginning, later on there's the resentment that, well, okay, I did what he or she wanted, but it wasn't really what I wanted, and now I resent it, and now I'm angry. And that's when the sex life usually starts to suffer.
And that's when someone starts cheating.
Right.
Now, in terms of the law of attraction, what is resonance?
Resonance, a lot of people are familiar with this word in music.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have two notes that are either the same or that are harmonious, together it creates a stronger sound. And the same thing happens with people. When you meet someone that you resonate with, you feel more alive. You feel seen and understood. And
in tune, like with music, you're in tune.
You're in tune with each other, and so both people are enhanced. When the resonance isn't there, it's like two notes that clash.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I've always thought that that was the reason why certain people are attracted to certain people and not attracted to others, because they are on the same frequency, so to speak, the same vibration.
Right, right. And, you know, these terms, they may sound a little woo-woo to some people, but in fact, and I'm not a physicist, but, you know, the scientific work is there that really explains exactly how this operates. It's like, yeah, if you have two waves that are synchronized, then they get bigger. If they're not, they cancel each other out. And so these kinds of energetic phenomenon are very real, and a lot of people are getting more and more sensitive
yes.
to them. And they definitely have a dramatic impact both on how harmonious our relationships are, and also to what extent we feel grounded in a field of love. You have a group of people who are together, whether it's two people or a whole family or a whole community, who are really committed to practicing unconditional love. It creates a very strong field, the resonance between these aligned intentions really supports everyone to be better able to succeed.
So you mentioned unconditional love. What is your definition of unconditional love?
Well, love without conditions, exactly what it says.
Mm-hmm.
So most of us have learned or experienced in our families a conditional love, and this is partly because of the way that people actually think that they need to discipline their children by withdrawing love. So if you're not a good girl or you're not a good boy, then mommy and daddy withdraw their love and make you bad and wrong. So, you know, we learn this in our families usually and then carry it over into our romantic relationships. Okay, I love you if you do it the way I want you to do it. And yeah, if you don't want to live where I want to live or spend your Sunday the way I want to spend my Sunday, then you don't love me and I don't love you. That's conditional love. Mm-hmm. Unconditional love is completely accepting, never makes the other wrong, never blames the other, but is a kind of like a mother's love for her baby, is just accepting of everything. Now, this doesn't mean that you, again, allow someone to mistreat you,
right,
or that you don't have any boundaries,
mm-hmm,
but the love remains. So I love you very much, and you know, I'm not going to live in the same house with you because you never clean up after yourself, you know, maybe mm-hmm, something like that. So it's not about just allowing people to walk all over you, but it is about staying in that love. And of course, none of us can do this perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where forgiveness comes in. To forgive yourself and forgive the other when we realize, okay, we're judging, we're making conditions, and that's okay, we're human, now let's drop it and come back to love.
So maybe it's about, I love you, but I don't love your actions, or I don't love your behavior.
Right, right, yeah, making that distinction.
Yeah. Because otherwise someone listening to this might be like, okay, so I'm supposed to have unconditional love for someone who's, let's say, verbally abusive. And obviously, you know, you can't put up with that.
Right, right. And it's actually, you know, if, and this is, you know, difficult. This is a challenge. This mm-hmm. is why you know, some people think this is what our whole purpose is in living this life, is to learn how can we stay in the love, but at the same time not have this idea that love means letting somebody do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes, sometimes people call it fierce love. That the fierce love,
the
more active feminine is perhaps angry that someone, you know, is like Jesus in the temple mm-hmm. Casting out the money changers, saying, you know, no, this is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
But from a place not of judging and blaming, from a place of loving and accepting, but still be very powerful, very assertive about what is okay and what is not okay with you.
Okay, so let's go on to another law. What is the law of truth?
The law of truth. Well, what I've discovered is, again, going back to the way most of us were raised, we seem to think, first of all, that if we really let someone hear our truth, if we really are completely honest about what we're thinking and feeling, that we'll be rejected. And in fact, it doesn't work that way. When we're able to really be honest without judging and blaming, but just saying what's true, this actually stimulates love. And I think the way that this works is that it helps someone really understand what your experience is, and then they can empathize. And empathy is very close to this unconditional love that we're talking about. So this is part of the law of truth. Another aspect of the law of truth, you know, some people have said truth is actually the same thing as love, that truth mm-hmm. is love in action,
mm-hmm.
that truth is the expression of love. So this is another way of saying the same thing, I think, is to acknowledge that, yeah, not the truth as in a belief system, mm-hmm. but the truth as in what's really in your heart. That's love.
So you mean like saying, let's say you're dating someone but you're not exclusive and you see them out with another woman and you're jealous. So you're saying by expressing your truth that, you know, I felt very jealous when I saw you with that woman. That is that what you mean?
That's what I mean. Yeah. Yeah. Admitting that we're less than perfect. Being willing to be vulnerable. Being willing to communicate without blame and without judgment, that, you know, we're struggling, we're suffering, we're sad, we're happy, whatever it is. This is really the emotional truth that allows people to get close enough so that they can share love. It's hard to love from layers and layers of defenses.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying then by expressing that truth and being that vulnerable and saying I was jealous, that that person will then feel closer to you as a result of you being vulnerable?
You know, it sounds strange, but it's really seems to be the way it works. This is this is the way I felt it. This is the way other people have expressed to me that they felt it. This is truth is an aphrodisiac. Mm. People don't realize this. Now, you know, if it's coming from a place of manipulation,
yeah.
or if it's expressed in a way that is you know, subtly making the other person wrong, mm-hmm. not just, you know, I felt jealous when I saw you with that other person, but even though it's not said in the tone of voice is, mm-hmm. and you shouldn't have done that,
right.
then it may not have the same effect.
Okay.
But if you can really just get it down to what you're feeling without a demand for the other person to change, yes, it really, it's magic. It brings people closer. And, of course, both people have to drop their defenses for this to work. I might say, I was jealous when I saw you, and even though I really wasn't blaming, the other person might be so guilty that they feel blamed. So both people need to drop their defenses and be in the truth. And when that happens, that's when love really expands.
So maybe if one person drops their defenses, the other person will be more likely to drop theirs too.
Definitely, yes.
Okay. And then you also talk about love and freedom. So how do those two things go together?
Well, again, you know, freedom is associated with the fifth chakra, and is truth. So these are very connected. And nothing will suffocate love faster than a sense of obligation. So really, really being free, feeling your freedom to have to love who you love. This doesn't mean to have sex with the whole world, mm-hmm. but it means to love, to open your heart, knowing that you have the freedom to love expands your love. Feeling that you need to keep your love in a box, in a cage, and only let it out at appropriate moments, this contracts love.
Mm. Okay. So it has to be expressed all the time, everywhere, with everybody.
Yes.
I get it. Now, I have under the Law of Truth chapter, the heading Purpose and Alignment. Now, you mentioned sex. let's see. You said that when people have a shared life purpose and similar spiritual values, they have a strong basis for a relationship. So that's at the bottom. But then you said at the very top of the triangle is sex, sexual attraction. But I kind of have a problem with that. It's like, if I'm not sexually attracted, I mean, if that's the last thing that's important, I don't know. Do you know what I'm trying to say? I can't even say it.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people put it this way. I like this person, but there's no chemistry.
Right, right.
And, you know, this chemistry thing, I'm not sure everybody means the same thing when they're talking about it. And I also don't mean that that it's unimportant to feel sexually attracted. But when I say that sex is at the top of the pyramid, or that rightfully it's at the top of the pyramid, I mean that just having a sexual attraction is not necessarily a good basis
no.
for relationship. It's a good basis for good sex.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much more to a relationship than just the sexual part. And without, you know, minimizing the importance of the sexual part at all, I think it's probably one of the most easily accessed, peak, pleasurable, spiritual, physically healthy experiences that it's available to us as humans. It's, you know, it's a wonderful thing. But if it's at the core of your reason to be with a person, you may not be compatible with all the other also important areas, such as ability to communicate with each other, to share a purpose in life, to support each other emotionally, to choose a similar kind of lifestyle. So the best sex in the world is not going to overcome a lack of harmony in those other areas. And the sexual attraction, and I've experienced this personally,
mm-hmm.
sometimes it's not there initially,
mm-hmm.
but it develops over time as you grow to love another person that you are resonant with.
Mm.
Now, there's some people you might know for your whole lifetime, and energetically, it's just not a match.
Yeah.
And so the only way you really know the difference is to take the time to get to know someone and see what happens. And to let go of the pictures that we have and the stories that we have about who we're sexually attracted to, because sometimes that's what's in the way,
mm-hmm.
is just an idea in the mind. And that's very different, you know, that can change, that's not real. But the resonance or the vibrational alignment that we were talking about before, that is real. So that could be masked by our beliefs and our preconceptions. And so sometimes, yeah, it takes a while to get through all that illusion to see what's really underneath. And that's why that kind of sex that comes at the top of an alignment on all the other levels, that's very sustainable. That's a sustainable relationship. That's a relationship that is grounded in reality.
See, because I've never experienced that where, I mean, if I'm not sexually attracted to someone when I meet them, it's probably not going to happen. So right now I cannot fathom, you know, sharing a life purpose with someone and not finding them sexually attractive and then thinking that I am going to have sex with them, because it's like, I don't think so.
No, I'm, you know, not without some sexual attraction. Sex is not a
good
fun experience, as you say. And, you know, women tend to maybe be a little less inclined than men. Not necessarily, but I think women may tune in a little bit more than men do to what the reality is of the attraction,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, men, I've heard it called eye candy. You know,
mm-hmm.
men may have a picture of what an attractive woman looks like, and that's what they think they're attracted to. and they completely miss the actual cues of their body that are telling them whether they're attracted, because they're so influenced by one channel. Maybe the visual is a common one, which is not to say that women can't also go there, but I think women maybe are wired up differently and maybe a little more tuned in to the energetics. But there's many, many relationship gurus who say that the most sustainable relationship is not the one where the sexual charge is off the charts. That, like Harville uh-huh. Hendrix, for example, says that when you experience a sexual charge that's off the charts, this means that the person is stimulating your childhood programming that you received, and that while it can create a lot of growth to work out your parental issues with a new partner, it may, again, not be the rewarding kind of relationship that people are looking for. And, of course, if there's no attraction at all, then, you know, maybe there's no resonance, but a medium level of attraction seems to be what is more workable. So
not someone that you're like madly attracted to right away, and not someone that you're totally repulsed by, but someone like, you know, maybe he's got potential or she's got potential.
Right. That's what, you know, I'm not saying pro or con on this, but I think there's a certain amount of wisdom in it.
Right. Okay, and then finally the last question, what is the law of consciousness?
Well, the law of consciousness asks us to shift away from the idea that love is a thing or an object, and to recognize that in reality love is a state of consciousness. So in the old paradigm that most of us were raised in, we tend to think of love as a pie. There's a finite amount of it. Or we tend to think of love as a bank account, and there's a certain amount of love dollars in there. And once they're spent, they're gone. And love in reality is not a physical object. It's not something that we can acquire or hoard or give away. What it is a state of consciousness. And in the book, I use the metaphor of a radio station. It's broadcasting all the time. And all you have to do is tune into it. And an infinite number of people can listen to that radio station, can tune into the same station. And the more open you are to that station, the better it's going to come in.
Perfect. And that's a perfect way to end, since this is a radio show.
Right.
So, of course, your website is lovewithoutlimits.com. And I know, do you have a newsletter that people can sign up for?
Yes. On the website, you can sign up to receive a monthly it's not really a newsletter at this time. It's much more of a personal letter about my realizations that month, as well as events that I may have coming up, like my new book coming out in June.
Okay, great. And what is the name of that?
And that is called Polyamory in the 21st Century.
Wow, sounds very interesting. We may have to have you back to discuss that.
Okay.
But right now, the book for today is The Seven Natural Laws of Love, the author Deborah Taj Annapol, and the website is Love Without Limits. And thank you so much for being on today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Have fun in Hawaii.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. So I'm going to do something I haven't done in a while. And that is
Celebrity Corner.
Okay. So, as I'm sure you've all heard, Sandra Bullock is in the news because of Jesse James. It's so funny. They asked, what's his name, Ozzy Osbourne, one of the paparazzi the other day. He goes, what do you think of Jesse James? And he thought they were talking about the outlaw Jesse James that lived like over 100 years ago. So he's like, he's dead. He thought it was a trick question probably. But anyways, so let's see. You know, I wish that I could talk to Sandra Bullock for 10 minutes, maybe 15. Maybe I just might need 10. And to help her, because I know what she's doing right now. Well, not what she's doing right now, but, you know, I know what she's thinking. Okay, let's say that. Because it's what everyone thinks when they're cheated on. And it's what you're doing at that moment that actually makes the situation worse. So let me explain, because you're probably wondering, what is she talking about? Keeping in the law of attraction theme here, of course, you know, what you think about, what you are, you attract. So right now she's obviously pissed. She's not very happy with him. She's angry. She's second guessing herself. She's thinking about everything that he did, and she's thinking about the situation, right? She's thinking about what she doesn't want. Everything that she's thinking about is everything that she does not want. And unfortunately, or fortunately, when you think about what you do not want, when you focus on what you do not want, when you talk about what you don't want, when that is your program all day, every day, that is what you get more of. You get more of what you don't want. So what she would need to do, and what anyone in that situation would need to do, actually any situation that you're not happy with, is do not think about what you don't want. Think about what you do want. Think about what you want. So she wants a loving, faithful guy who has her back, who actually has her back, who doesn't just make her believe he has her back. Right? So that's all you need to think about. Wow, I can't believe I have this guy in my life who has my back. I'm so happy. I've got this guy. He has my back. He's there for me. He's faithful. He loves me. And I'm so happy. And if you would just focus on that, you would be amazed at the changes. Because people think they need to solve the problem. And that's actually not the way it works. You don't need to solve the problem. This problem will solve itself when you get into that vibe, that frequency of thinking about what you want. Quick example here. My neighbor upstairs, he seems to be awake all night. I don't know if he's a vampire or what. But and so he has this TV on, sometimes louder than usual. And so I can't fall asleep. So for years, there's been this struggle back and forth, blah, blah, blah. You know, once in a while, I'd send up a note. And I didn't know what to do. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to think about it. I don't know how the heck this is going to get resolved, but I'm going to ignore it, and I'm not going to think about it. I did go up to speak with him, and I was very nice about it. and I had suggested headphones, but at first his reaction was, headphones? I don't want to wear headphones, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, long story short, I end up getting an email saying, I've decided to get headphones. And he got the headphones. He has them on every night, thank God, and no more noise. See, I didn't have to solve the problem. I just had to stop thinking about the problem, and the problem solved itself. Isn't that interesting? Okay, so I hope you enjoyed today's show with a spiritual theme. As I become even more spiritual, my shows will become even more spiritual. So I hope you'll join with me in my road to enlightenment. And if not, then go listen to someone else. Oh, God. Okay. So what am I saying here? Oh, yes. Again, the guest was Deborah Annapole, The Seven Natural Laws of Love. Her website is lovewithoutlimits.com. My book, you can read an excerpt of Lucia's Lessons of Love at lessonsoflove.net. Of course, I have my free weekly newsletter that you can sign up for, and that is at theartoflove.net. Of course, I have my Facebook fan book page, FFF, and that is, I just got the quote-unquote vanity URL this week, custom URL, so it's facebook.com/cougarexpert, hey, and I'm also myspace.com/cougarexpert and twitter.com/cougarexpert. I got all three covered, and I'm so proud. That is one of my accomplishments for the week. So you can always find me just wherever you are. Just type in Cougar Expert and I'll pop up. And I guess that is it for today. So much. Thank you so much for joining me. And until next time, remember that love inspires, empowers, uplifts, and enlightens.
You're listening to The Art of Love with your host, Lucia, right here on LA Talk Radio.